is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick in Washington. If it tastes like a hamburger, if it looks like a hamburger and bleeds like a hamburger, but it's made from plants and not cows, is it still a hamburger? And can it win over meat-loving America, where, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, citizens ate an average of 110 pounds of red meat last year? Earlier this week, Burger King announced that it's going to make the Impossible Whopper available at its more than 7,000 branches nationwide by the end of this year. The Impossible Whopper is what's known as a plant-based meat alternative. It's made from plants, but it's designed to emulate the real thing. And we heard from a lot of you about this news.
This is Ralph from Groveland, Florida. I have no interest in trying the Impossible Burger.
Hi, my name is Mary. I live in suburban Philadelphia. I would love to try the Impossible Burger.
It is just another example of the highly processed fake food that makes people sick and steers them away from healthier real foods. I will stick with grass-fed meat.
I remember being so enamored and inhaling quite a few of their Whoppers when I was in my late teens and 20s. For a variety of reasons, I stopped eating them, but that was a most satisfying, slumming burger experience. I'd love to try it again.
Well, thanks for your calls, Ralph and Mary. Joining us to talk about the growing popularity and availability of these so-called plant-based meat alternatives is Pat Brown. He's the founder and CEO of Impossible Foods, which developed that Impossible Burger that Burger King and many other restaurants are now selling or about to sell. Hi, Pat.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
Great to have you. Also with me in the studio is food writer for The Washington Post, Tim Carman. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Todd.
Great to have you. So, Pat... What is the Impossible Burger? How do you make it?
Two different questions. So the Impossible Burger is delicious, juicy, raw ground beef as we sell it, with a great nutritional profile, great source of protein, great source of iron, made entirely from non-animal ingredients with a tiny fraction of the environmental footprint of the cow-derived version.
Okay, but tell me how you make it.
We make it by basically very carefully selecting a specific set of proteins and other simple nutrients, mostly from plant sources or by fermentation, and combining them again in a very simple process that's virtually identical to just putting them in a mixing bowl and stirring them with a spatula.
Plant-based protein sources. Are we talking soy? Or I saw on one competitor they make theirs with peas. Is that what you do?
The major protein that we use is from soy. We also use a protein, not starch, isolated from potato. And the magic ingredient is an ingredient called leg hemoglobin. It's a heme protein that we produce by fermentation using yeast.
So is that what can enable you to take plant protein, which does soy and peas do not taste like meat, and make them taste very close to a beef burger?
It's not the only thing, but it's by far the biggest, the biggest magic ingredient. It turns out that the thing that is responsible for meat tasting categorically unlike anything from the plant world is a molecule called heme, which, although it's found in every living thing, it's super abundant in animal tissues, and it catalyzes the chemical reactions that turn simple abundant nutrients like amino acids and sugars and vitamins and fats into the hundreds of volatile aroma molecules that add up to the unmistakable aroma and taste of meat.
All right. Well, Pat has had some great news lately because the fast food world, where a lot of burgers get moved every day in this country, is on board. You may have seen commercials like these.
Yeah, I've seen a lot out here in the West.
But a juicy charbroiled burger with a patty made from plants?
Only the folks at Carl's Jr. can pull out something that bold.
This Whopper has no beef.
That's impossible. This tastes just like a classic Whopper.
No beef.
Introducing the Impossible Whopper with a patty made from plants.
I'm sorry? Tastes just like a Whopper.
I've never had plant taste like beef before.
Tastes like a Whopper.
Tastes like a Whopper.
Tastes like a beef burger.
You sit through a couple of those commercials and realize why you love public radio so very much. But, Tim, you've been trying the Impossible Whopper. It's only being sold, as I understand it, Test Market in St. Louis. You went out there to Burger King's test area to try this Impossible Whopper and give us the flavor profile. Let us know what the experience is like.
I did. They tested it in St. Louis, and I think that was an interesting choice right off the bat. It wasn't tested on the East or West Coast, I would imagine, because there's probably a very sympathetic market already for the Impossible Burger. So they put it in the middle of the country, and I think that was a really wise move. And in my experience, I went to like three different outlets, and people were crazy for it. People waiting in line, people ordering, people calling in from all around the country wanting like small outlets in St. Louis to ship it to them. And they all wanted to either try it or they had their own reasons. I met one person who was diabetic and wanted to get more a plant-based diet and wanted to still have the flavor of meat. So they were all there and they had different reasons for finding themselves in a place they usually aren't, which is Burger King.
We got one tweet that says, being a burger addict, I had to cut beef out of my diet after bypass surgery. The Impossible Burger scratches that itch like no other, but only occasionally due to the very high fat. And the high fat is something we're going to talk about later in the hour. But Tim, what about your experience? You tried it.
I did. I tried it multiple times. I tried it at Burger King, and I also tried it at White Castle, which is also doing Impossible burger meat. I think it really is successful at Burger King. I think, and I think largely that's because it's a low bar to cross. You know, if you look at the Whopper, it's really about 30% of the entire sandwich is beef. And of that beef, I mean, it's being charbroiled right across the famous Burger King charbroiler. And most of the fat is rendered out. If you like just take a bite of the beef of a classic Whopper, it's very not juicy. Mm-hmm. It's fairly rubbery. So the flavor of the fat is pretty much rendered out. It's a well done piece of meat, and what you've got is sort of a residual flavor of beef. So mostly the flavor of the beef of a Whopper, as far as the beef is concerned, is the flame grilled flavor, the famous grill flavor of Burger King. And I think the ingenuity of Impossible Foods and their burger is that they've designed a patty that can stand up to this charbroiler. And, you know, if you could think about like some of the vegetarian patties of your past, maybe they've been made with rice or black beans or something like that. They all fall apart, right? Yeah. First bite, boom, you no longer have a patty. But now you've got a patty that holds together and has a sort of texture of beef. And it stands up to that charbroiler, and it takes on the grill flavor. So when it's tucked in to all the toppings and the bun and the ingredients, the tomato and the onions, it does a really good job of mimicking the flavor.
And the overall flavor of a fast food burger, any burger really, the meat or whatever you have in there is a big part of it, but it's got mayo, ketchup, mustard, tomatoes, lettuce. There's a lot going on in there, which is great.
Yeah.
Other than just the beef patty.
About a year or so, I measured I actually took a scale with me to all the major fast food restaurants and weighed how much the burger is as part of the larger sandwich, and all of them are like 30% or less.
Yeah. Okay, so the meat is not even necessarily the most important part of the sandwich. All right, Pat, I want to ask you about how people are reacting to this and the industry is reacting. But here's Nicole from Maryland who left us a message.
My name is Nicole, and I'm calling from Millersville, Maryland. I wanted to say that as someone who's been vegan for the past 7 years, after I learned about the realities of the meat, dairy, egg, and seafood industries, I'm thrilled that it seems like every other day now I'm hearing about another large company offering up vegan options. Chipotle has Sofritas, Del Taco and Qdoba added Beyond Meat beef crumbles and Impossible Meat to their respective menus. TGI Fridays has the Beyond Meat burger. Ice cream companies like Ben & Jerry's and Breyers have non-dairy options. Pizza Hut is launching vegan cheese options nationwide later this summer. And now Burger King will be offering the Impossible Whopper.
Pat Brown, CEO of Impossible Foods, you are no longer tucked in the back corner of the organic health food store. You're on the mass market. What has that meant for you?
Well, that was our intention from the get-go, you know, the purpose. The mission of the company from day one has been to completely replace the use of animals as a food technology, develop a complete technology platform for producing more delicious, healthier, and far more sustainable products across the entire gamut of animal-derived foods using scalable, sustainable plant ingredients. That's always been what we're about. And the way that we achieve that mission is focusing relentlessly on the consumer. In the case of meat, focusing relentlessly on the hardcore meat consumer, and making it our job to figure out what defines deliciousness, what defines nutritional value for them, and over-delivering it.
All right. Let me make sure we hear from Tim for a second before we take a break. Tim, the hardcore meat consumer at a place like Burger King, other places in the future, are they going to buy in here, do you think, based on your experience?
Oh, you know, based on the people I have talked to that have already put Impossible Burgers on their menu, and we're talking about places that are like hardcore carnivore dens. I mean, like dive bars, restaurants. Their customers really want the Impossible Burger, and when Burger King rolled out the Impossible Whopper, they found that they did not have their supplies, so their customers were very upset. So I think there's a big market for it.
Demand was high. Well, on Twitter, I'm all here for the Impossible and Beyond Burgers. I've had Impossible from Burger King and White Castle. They're both on fire. Tim Carman is a food writer for The Washington Post. He's going to rejoin us later in the hour. What do cattlemen think about products that imitate beef but aren't beef? We're going to hear from the industry. We all have a stake. I'm Todd Zwillick. Glad to be with you. This is 1A. Welcome back to 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick, in for Joshua Johnson. We're talking about plant-based meat alternatives that emulate the real thing with Impossible Foods founder and CEO Pat Brown. Here's what one of you had to say about the growing availability of products that imitate meat.
This is Suzanne from Evanston, Illinois. 34 years ago, I went to our friend's farm and found that Jelly Bean, the cow that I would visit, the cow that would lick my hand just like a dog, and who was so sweet, had gone to market. I was pretty devastated, and at that point, I stopped eating red meat. These days, I drive around to art shows around the country, and I'm often at the mercy of fast food restaurants. I've wondered why an option hasn't been available earlier, and I would really like something that would give me some protein, is decent for the environment, and would get me quickly on my way.
Well, thanks for your call, Suzanne. We'd love to hear from you as well. You can comment on our Facebook page. You can tweet us at 1A. Our email address, 1A@WAMU.org. Well, Suzanne mentioned that she's looking for options that are good for the environment. So we're going to dive into that point now with two more guests. With us from the University of California, California Davis, is Frank Mitlerner. He's a professor and air quality specialist at the school's Department of Animal Science. Frank, good to have you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And with me here in the studio is Danielle Beck. She's a lobbyist, a senior director of government affairs for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Danielle, welcome to you.
Hey, Todd.
So, Pat, you're still with us.
Yeah.
Pat's here, also CEO of Impossible Foods. Pat, commercials like Carl's Jr. and Burger King focused on how similar your products and other products taste to the actual real thing. But your website, your marketing focuses really on saving the earth. That's the bottom line. What part do you think Impossible Foods and other plant-based meat alternatives can play in fighting climate change? How big of a problem, in your eyes, is the meat industry to the climate problem?
Well, this isn't based on my own research, but there's been abundant research looking at the global environmental impact of the animal farming industry at large and the beef industry. And any of your listeners I would encourage them to go look at the scientific literature on the subject. But basically, the use of animals as a food technology is by far, according to probably a consensus of environmentalists, the most destructive technology on Earth. And it's a major source of greenhouse gas emissions, second only to the power industry as a source of greenhouse gas emissions. It's by far the biggest user and polluter of water of any industry or technology on Earth. It uses almost half of Earth's land area, according to the International Livestock Research Institute and other sources. And because of that incredible resource intensiveness and the huge land footprint, it is overwhelmingly the driver of a catastrophic meltdown in biodiversity that's very far advanced right now. The total biomass of cows on Earth today is more than 10 times the total biomass of every wild mammal, bird, reptile, and amphibian living on land put together. Cows more than tenfold outweigh essentially every wild land animal on Earth.
All right, well, I'm sure Danielle...
That's what we've done. Well, I'm not making these statistics up. You can look them up. And it's an environmental catastrophe that's pushing us very close to the edge. Fortunately, there's a solution, and I'm optimistic.
Danielle, you're here on behalf of the U.S. Cattlemen's Beef Association. Is the beef industry... Look, we don't necessarily have to debate... Let's not debate whether climate change is happening. We can debate the impact of the beef industry on climate change, but most importantly, we should ask what the beef industry is doing to help lessen that impact.
Yeah. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association is the nation's largest, oldest trade association representing U.S. beef producers. We have more than 25,000 members across the U.S., 92% and then some are family-owned farm and ranch operations, and they're doing their part. They're committed to reducing their environmental footprint. I mean, compared to 1977, today the U.S. produces the same amount of beef with 33% fewer cattle. We produce about 18% of the world's beef here with 8% of the world's cattle.
What impact do cattle have on the methane load and the carbon load that the United States, we can talk about the world, let's stick to the United States, your industry puts out that help trap greenhouse gases?
Yeah, so, according to EPA data, we put out about 2% of GHG emissions.
In the United States, not worldwide. It's much higher worldwide, right? Other countries don't have the types of farming practices that we have here.
That's correct.
So you say 2% just in the United States. Frank Mitlerner from UC Davis, animals feed on land. Land has to be managed with machines, so we know that. We know that cows emit methane. What is red meat's impact on the gases that contribute to climate change? And how do you think meat alternatives might help?
So first of all, there's some confusion because the EPA quotes 2% for beef, and that's correct if you look at direct emissions. And that's a fair thing to do because they compare all sectors of society using direct emissions. And yes, 2% is direct emissions for beef. All life cycle emissions for beef in the United States is 3.3%. Mm. Now, what's really important here in this whole discussion is I see a drastic overplaying of the impact of dietary choices on climate impacts happening, particularly in this realm of selling plant-based alternatives. The main reason for this is that the emissions of methane that stem from ruminant livestock are overplayed. And here's why I say they're overplayed. Methane is really a result of ruminant animals being able to ingest cellulose from plants, from grasses, let's say, and make animal-based proteins from it. It's an unintended consequence, basically, of this ability of using cellulose. And in my opinion, that's a beautiful thing because what we have going here is a biological function of animals using something that was derived during photosynthesis, which is the generation of cellulose. And they then basically use non-human edible feedstuffs in a solar-powered way of producing from cellulose animal-based proteins. And in my opinion, that is not anywhere close to being a destructive technology, but it is a beautiful thing.
Now, Frank, full disclosure, we know Danielle's interest. She represents the beef industry. Pat represents his company, Impossible Foods. Do you have any financial interests, research money, financial connections that listeners need to know about?
No, zero.
Zero. Nothing from the meat industry, from agriculture?
No.
Okay, good. Danielle, what position does your organization, your industry, take on the rising availability and popularity of beefless burgers? I'm sure you didn't care much when Pat was parked, like I said, in the back corner of the organic health food store, but he's not anymore. He's a comer, and he's at Burger King.
Yeah. Beef producers here in the U.S., they support consumer choice in the marketplace. We have no problem with providing more options because if you think about it, you know, a family of five, your teenage daughter has decided she's going to try out being vegan. Having that option at Burger King allows a whole family to go into the store. You know, if four out of five are still buying beef, that's fine. You know, if you look at the total market share for alternative proteins, it's relatively low. It's about 1% here in the U.S. You know, our biggest competitor is still chicken at the end of the day.
Still chicken. So you sound like you're not worried about impossible meat.
Yeah, no, I think...
What if they call themselves meat? They use that word, and I understand that some people in your industry have a problem with this, and lobbying fights sometimes get down to this. Don't call yourself meat if you're not meat.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, we have no problem with a little fair, healthy competition. It's about the nomenclature and the wording, because, you know, on one hand, it feels like a lot of these companies are trying to piggyback off of our good name. People love beef. They love a good burger on the 4th of July. They love a steak dinner, you know, when you're celebrating an anniversary. And a lot of these companies are trying to market themselves, piggybacking off of our coattails and our strong name recognition, while, you know, in the second breath, disparaging our product and, you know, saying we're going to be the end of the world.
Pat, emulation is important to your business. People won't buy the Impossible Burger if it doesn't taste like the real thing. So does Danielle have a right to be annoyed that you're piggybacking off the popularity of beef?
Well, she has a right to feel however she wants to feel. We are only interested in serving the consumer who is looking for delicious meat. I love vegans as much as the next guy, but that's not the consumer we care about. We want a consumer who is looking for the most delicious, juicy, nutritious piece of meat that they can find. And perhaps they care about its environmental footprint, but we want to win that consumer whether they care about the environmental impact or not. And that means that our job is to focus relentlessly on what, for the meat-loving consumer, defines value and deliciousness and over-deliver it. The product that we're producing, we are producing meat. We are doing it a different way. For thousands of years, we've only known one way to produce meat, and that is raising animals and slaughtering them and cutting them into little bits and eating them. That's been the historical background. We found a better way to do it, to produce a food whose value to consumers, if you were to ask 1,000 meat-loving consumers, what do you value about meat? They'd say, we love the sensory experience, the deliciousness, the aroma, juiciness, etc. We love the protein. We love the iron. We love the versatility. We do not love the fact that it comes from the carcass of an animal. So we are delivering the things that meat-loving consumers love about meat without the stuff they don't love, which is basically the very problematic way that we've produced it for thousands of years, but we won't be producing it that way for much longer.
Let's take a quick pause. I'm Todd Zwillick. You're listening to 1A. We got this note from Patty in Ann Arbor, Michigan, who says, as a vegetarian, I did a bit of research when I heard about today's topic, the Impossible Whopper. The Impossible Foods, quote, burger is vegan, but that doesn't necessarily equate with good or beneficial. The Impossible Burger contains genetically modified yeast. It has also been tested on rats, regrettably, according to the company's website. We got this tweet from one listener. If an industry like animal agriculture causes great harm to living beings in our environment, why not encourage it to change? Get them to grow healthy plants instead of relying on exploiting animals. No one needs to lose their job. They just need to change it. Now, Pat, you mentioned nutrition, and a couple of people had so far, and I want to talk about the nutrition of Impossible Burgers and some of your competitors. Here's what we heard from one listener.
My name is Rich from Michigan. Last summer, I tried an Impossible Burger that was at a burger shop from a gourmet chef, one of the better rated chefs in town. And I have to admit, it looked like a regular burger. It tasted like a regular burger. But I guess what made it taste so good, he cooked it in lard. If they cook it in lard, it may not be the health benefit that everyone is expecting.
Certainly anything cooked in lard is not going to have the health benefit you're expecting. But I ate not an Impossible Burger, but Beyond Meat. I bought some last night at the grocery store, and I took some notes on the nutrition. I'll tell you, when you hold up Beyond Meat burgers. You get two in a package, 270 calories, a ground beef, 80% ground beef, 80-20 they call it, 280 calories. They're pretty much on par. Total fat in a Beyond Meat burger, 20 grams, 21 grams for the ground beef. Really, the nutritional profile, Pat, is pretty much the same between one of your competitors. I think their product is similar to yours, Beyond Meat, and Pretty Fatty Beef. The sodium is way higher in the vegetarian burger. And I have to say, in terms of nutrition, none of this holds a candle to a turkey burger. I had turkey burgers alongside beef and the Beyond Meat burger. Lower fat, lower calories, lower sodium, lower saturated fat, lower everything. It's not even close. So what about the nutrition profile, Pat? Can you compete?
Well, one of our guidelines is that we're only going to sell a product if we believe it's healthier for the consumer than what it replaces. Not that we're going to try to replace a burger with a big bowl of kale, okay? Our product is lower in calories, substantially lower in calories. It has zero cholesterol. It's got lower total fat, lower saturated fat. It's got the same protein. It's same quality protein, actually slightly higher. And same iron, same bioavailable iron, same micronutrients, and so forth.
Hang on, let me stop you there quickly. Your product has lower fat, lower saturated fat. I bought Beyond Meat, which is the mass market ground beef. I understand.
Yeah.
I bought Beyond Meat, which is not you. Let's be fair. You're not Beyond Meat. That's a competitor.
Yeah.
So you're saying your product does a little bit better and actually beats out 80-20 ground beef in terms of these nutritional.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can go to our website and just get all the nutritional facts you want. But let me just make it clear that what we're doing is making a product that we think is better in every way that matters to consumers than the cow-derived counterpart, okay? It's not the perfect all-purpose food. It's just better than the cow-derived version in the ways that matter to consumers. We wouldn't recommend that a consumer build their entire diet around burgers, whether from a cow or ours. But if you're going to have a burger, you're better off choosing ours than the cow-derived version.
So, Frank Mitlerner, what do you see here? The nutrition might be competitive to 80-20 beef. It looks like it's about on par. You're skeptical of the environmental claims. What about this industry as a whole, in your view?
Well, in my opinion, this is a industrial replacement of a biological product. I think that I would expect that many of the consumers who choose these kind of plant-based alternatives would be skeptical of some of the production of it, because I view this as a highly processed product, and the NGO portion of it in the lac hemoglobin is something that Pat Brown and Impossible has been critiqued for quite some time, particularly by his competitors, but also by consumers who wonder, why do we have to have that portion in it? Not that I, Frank Mitlerner, have a problem with GMOs, but many of the typical consumers who would select this kind of product, they might have that. What I've been wondering for the longest time is, how come that Impossible burgers are not available in retail? They're available in restaurants, but not in retail. Beyond Burger is, or Beyond Meats, but the Impossible is not. And I would like to know if that has anything to do with the lac hemoglobin discussion, this GMO portion of this burger.
Let's put that question to Pat, but we will do it after a short break, because we're coming up on a break, and I want to make sure that Linda gets a word here, who sent us an email. Although I am vegetarian, I am even more concerned with eating some natural foods. I stopped eating processed foods years ago. My problem with meatless beef is the intensive processing involved in its creation, resulting in a product that is far removed from natural. Thanks, Lisa, for that note. We're going to talk more about Impossible Meat, the Impossible Whopper, and the potential replacement of America's love for beef with plant-based alternatives. It's getting big in the industry. Stay with us here on 1A. Welcome back to 1A. I'm Todd Swillick, and we're talking about peak meat and the growing popularity of plant-based alternatives like the Impossible Whopper. Well, this week, Burger King announced its plans to sell the Impossible Whopper right across the nation by the end of the year. Impossible Meat has also been called Beyond Meat, which one of you left a message about for us.
This is Kathy from Berthoud, Colorado. I had to give up animal proteins for the most part several years ago and have been on a vegan/vegetarian diet ever since with my family. We do love the Beyond Meat burgers. The whole family does, so that's been good. I will say that my lab works have stayed within normal limits on this diet, and there's no sign of disease progression. I will concede, though, that my husband will sneak burgers and steaks when I'm gone traveling.
Pat Brown, before we took a break, Frank Mitlerner wanted to know why Impossible burgers are not sold retail in the grocery store and are only sold through fast food right now. Is that the case? And if so, why?
We are not currently available in retail. And the reason is simple, that we're a small company that has been scaling as fast as we possibly can to meet demand. The demand that we're seeing just in the food service sector has been skyrocketing. It's you know, increased by many double digits just in the past couple of months. In the past 2 months, our sales in Asia tripled. We are scaling as fast as we possibly can to keep up with the growing demand. We intend to be selling our product in retail by the end of the year. That has been our plan for a long time. But we've just found ourselves in a situation where the demand has been growing so rapidly that it's just a question of allocating the product between, you know, customers who are looking for it.
Plus, you've got an IPO, right? Aren't you going?
No.
Oh, Beyond
Actually,
Meat is going public.
Something. You said that, yeah, Impossible and Beyond are the same thing. We're not at all the same thing.
Beyond Meat is going public at the end of the week. Looks like they have a strike price of $23 to $25. Again, not your company, but that does show an industry that believes it's growing.
Oh, absolutely. No, Impossible Foods is thriving, and we are basically right now our challenge is just to be able to scale production to keep up with demand.
Okay, so one of the questions here, though, is who's going to want to try Beyond Meat and Impossible Burger, and who isn't?
Hi, this is Erin from Annandale. I've been a vegetarian for about 25 years, and I've tried the Impossible Burger and a couple of the other new alternatives.
Lisa from Portland, Oregon. I'm a vegetarian, and I ordered a vegetarian burger at a restaurant, and it tasted like meat, which is great if you like meat, but if you're a vegetarian, it's kind of nasty. I couldn't finish it.
The ironic thing is it's too creepy for me because it is too close to meat.
Danielle, I know that you already know that some people just aren't interested in your product, but this does get to a side point, which is emulation is a huge part of Pat's business and a huge part of Beyond Meat's business. You have a problem with them selling in the meat section of the grocery store? Because that's where I bought my Beyond Burger last night. It was right next to the ground beef.
We don't have a problem with them competing us in the grocery store. It's a matter of how their products are packaged and labeled. As long as it's, you know, these products are providing consumers with enough information to make informed purchasing decisions, we have no problem with that. You know, being a millennial myself, I never have a stocked refrigerator. On my way home from work, I'm always hangry. I'll stop at the grocery store after sitting in traffic, grab the first thing I can find. If I'm not paying close attention or, you know, if I didn't work where I work, it's easy for me to, you know, see how I could make a mistake and purchase a product thinking I was getting one thing when I'm actually buying another.
How much money is your industry taking every year? I mean, the beef industry is huge. How big is it? Give me the universe.
Oh, you know, we are a billion-dollar industry, or billions.
Billions. And in terms of the potential market share of emulation plant-based meats, Beyond Meat has an IPO later on this week. They're a long way from being the beef industry, but what do your internal analysts tell you about the market threat?
Yeah, I mean, they're 1% of market share right now. Demand everywhere is growing, not just for traditional animal agriculture proteins, but, you know, for alternative proteins as well. And ultimately, I think it's going to take all of us holding hands in order to meet global food demand by 2050.
Catherine in Rockville sent us this email. There's more to cattle than the parts that we eat. What other industries and consumer products would be impacted if we stopped eating beef? Frank Mitlerner, that sounds like a good question for you.
Well, it is a very good question, because when you slaughter a beef animal, you have way more than just the meat. There are about 400 products that come from a beef carcass, and it goes all the way from leather to heart valves. And so there's no question that there is a large variety of products other than just the meat coming from those animals.
Susan Schneider sent us this email, which is very interesting. Much of your conversation seems to treat the beef industry as a monolith. In fact, there's a wide difference between beef produced in an industrialized feedlot and grass-fed beef. The former relies on heavily on corn and not natural grazing that your guests discussed. Danielle, that makes a point. Most of your industry is high-intensive feedlot farming, though, right?
I think that's a misconception when it comes to, you know, U.S. beef production. The majority of any cattle raised here in the United States, their lifespan is spent on grass, on pasture. Grass-fed, the last sort of 15% of their food consumption is in a CAFO, a concentrated feeding operation. And a lot of the things that cattle are being fed in CAFOs are upcycled products. It's distillers' grains. It's silage that, you know, really couldn't go into any other type of food production. And so cattle are actually recycling in that sense.
CAFO, that's the high-density feedlot.
Yes. If I can throw in another point, though, to what Frank said about, you know, over 400 different products are being used other than meat. There's also a really important consideration to be had about, you know, what happens if you remove cattle production from the United States economically. So, you know, 70% of land is used for cattle grazing. Over 40% of that, you couldn't grow anything else there. That land is not arable land. What happens to every rural economy that depends on cattle production as one of their major economic drivers?
Right. I mean, but you're not worried about that, though. You made a point that replacement products, if I can call them that, have 1% of market share. You're very confident in the future of beef. It's just about giving people alternatives.
Absolutely.
Pat, I want to let you go in just a minute, but what's next for you? What's next for Impossible Foods? You say basically you can't make them fast enough. So what are you worried about right now?
I'm worried about just trying to scale as fast as we possibly can to meet the demand. I'm actually not worried about much, but can I address a couple of the points that were brought up earlier?
Take just a minute.
Okay. So first of all, who is our customer? We have very good statistics that basically say 97% of our customers are not vegetarian. 97% of our customers who have eaten our product in the past year have eaten meat in the previous month. Okay, that's the only customer we care about, so that's very good news for us. Secondly, there's this notion that's promulgated that somehow cows are part of nature, and that couldn't be farther from the truth. We have basically covered the earth with cows at the expense of the wildlife that naturally lives in those environments. It's an environmental catastrophe. The life cycle of a cow is extremely artificial. It starts with artificial insemination. It ends with being fed a diet that no cow would choose to eat ever, and slaughter in a filthy slaughterhouse. So the notion that somehow this is nature, and what we're doing, putting together a delicious product out of carefully chosen ingredients that come from farms, that come from nature, it's completely backwards.
And, Danielle, I'll give you the last word.
I think some of those assertions are patently false. I'm not sure how else to respond. Our producers, they're environmental stewards. They're passionate about animal welfare. They care for their herds. They care for their land because that's part of their business model. And I think that they would fervently debate anybody saying otherwise.
Now, you all have a big debate in front of you. I think the jury and the judge on this debate ultimately will be the American consumer, and they're listening right now. Many of them are shopping for that Impossible Whopper and for Beyond Meat and the others, and many of them are shopping for regular Whoppers today. They will be the deciders here. I want to wrap up the conversation with Washington Post food writer Tim Carman, who you heard from at the beginning of the show. But first, I want to say thank you to my other guests here in Washington, Danielle Beck, Senior Director of Government Affairs for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, a lobbyist there. Thank you, Danielle.
Thank you.
Frank Mitlerner, Professor of Animal Science and Air Quality at University of California, Davis. Frank, thanks to you.
Thank you.
And Pat Brown, CEO and founder of Impossible Foods. Pat, I know you're busy and I know you have a little bit of a cold, so thanks for soldiering through and coming on with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
All right, great to have you. Tim Carman, give me a sense of what you heard in this conversation. There's certainly plenty of debate, maybe even a little bit of animosity between these two industries, but I think that you represent, in a way, the consumers who are going to buy this product or not.
Well, you know, I think there's a lot of focus right now on what the beef industry does and contributes to greenhouse gases. And, you know, there's been some mistakes, I think, made in the past on how much the industry does contribute. And I think there has been some readjustments on those numbers that Danielle rightly pointed out. At the same time, I think there are reasons why people want beef alternatives. And I think they're legitimate. You know, it's water use. It's land use. And these all have impacts. And then there's the non-environmental reasons. I mean, people that want to not eat animals, they have a love for animals. So I think there are justifiable reasons why people want meat alternatives.
I'm Todd Zwillick. This is 1A. I'll give you a little bit of my own experience just to break it down, Tim. When I went to the grocery store last night, it was my first purchase of one of these imitation plant-based products. On taste grounds, I was sold. Delicious. It was great. Price was about double. I didn't like it, but that's going to come down as the industry grows, so that's not a big deal. Nutrition-wise, we covered, I felt like it was a wash with fatty ground beef, which I tend not to eat. I do eat ground turkey, and it wasn't even close. So taste-wise, I'm there. Nutrition-wise, I got to say, not yet.
You know, I haven't had the Beyond Meat burger, so I'd be curious to try it. I've had the Impossible burger many times now, and I don't know if we've actually mentioned it, but, you know, they have reformulated. Mm-hmm. The Impossible Foods reformulated the patty earlier this year. They introduced it, and it decreased the amount of fat. It had higher nutritionals in other areas. I mean, we didn't really talk about all the other nutritionals that are in the Impossible Foods burger. I think they're trying. I think, as Pat indicated, they are trying to make the nutritionals better as they move along, as it evolves. Whether it'll always be if it'd be better than beef, or you know, if we'll ever consider it a health food, I doubt it. Mm. I mean, I think there's just reasons why you want to have a good flavor in it. I mean, if you're going to mimic beef, you're going to have some of the nutritional profiles of beef, which is fat, and it's always going to be a little bit fatty.
And it has to, or else it won't taste like the real thing. Well, Catherine in Virginia sent us this email. What about lab-grown meat? Where does that fit into the debate about agricultural meat alternatives? And I wonder if there is a future. We've heard a lot about stem cell technology, the potential to grow beef or something like beef in a laboratory environment. Mm-hmm. Pork, chicken, maybe even fish, if you'd want to replace that for environmental reasons. Is that really on the horizon?
It is on the horizon, but the horizon is way off in the distance. I went to San Francisco last year and wrote about this, but mostly based on cell-based fish, which is a really cutting-edge industry. But they can grow some cells, but the problem is in this industry is texturing the meat. They are a long way off in texturing it, and even if they can, the price is going to be outrageous
at first.
So they're not. I think it's safe to say they're not close yet.
We've been focused so much on beef because that's where the emulation is. But what about other kinds of meat? What about pork? What about chicken? Even potentially fish, which might be cell-based. Is there a good market in emulation for other forms of meat coming around the corner?
Well, I think there's companies that are trying. And I went to one company that's working on chicken. And, I mean, it's such a complex system. And you talk about the processing that's involved in trying to reproduce chicken in a laboratory setting. You know, you've got to create, I mean, there's so many, it's a very big discussion and it's very complicated. It gets very complicated very fast, but there's some hurdles they have to overcome. And some companies are getting there faster than others, but I think they're all trying it. But here's the interesting question. It's like we've got all these companies and we've got billions of dollars going into these companies that are trying to be alternatives to meat. And it's for a reason, right? Because maybe we don't like animal suffering, or we think that the agriculture industry creates too many problems. It's whether it's water usage when we're dealing with droughts and severe water shortages, or it's land use with extinction of many different species. But you get to the bottom line is that couldn't we just eat less meat? No.
Why do we
have to have all these companies that create something that represents the taste of meat? We could just eat less meat, but we seem to be incapable as a species.
Halstead tweets this: as a flexitarian, the Impossible Burger completely hits the spot when the craving for a burger comes up. It's just hard to find, and the BK News has me excited. I'm sure meat lovers would like it if they can just be willing to give it a try. And Tim Carman, you say, yes, give it a try, but maybe give other things a try too. This debate wouldn't be so hot if we didn't demand the Whopper in the first place, and maybe we don't have to. Tim Carman, food writer for the Washington Post, thanks for being in studio.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. This conversation on meat and our alternatives to meat at Burger King and everywhere else was produced by Avery Kleiman. To learn more about Avery and the rest of the great team, visit the website at the1a.org/staff. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington. It is distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Todd Zwillick. Thank you so much for listening. Happy eating. This is 1A.